This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Apocalypse of St. John. This is Lecture 11, given in Nuremberg on the 29th of June, 1908. We have followed the evolution of our Earth so far that we have seen how, after various important events which are characterized for us by the opening of the seven seals and the sounding of the seven trumpets, in the future the earth with all its beings will pass into a kind of spiritual condition, with the exception of those who refuse to receive the Christ principle. This refusal we have to understand as a malevolent and unintelligent spiritual opposition energetically exercised. Of course, when the earth has taken on its astral, its spiritual form, these beings too will be unable to exist in a dense material form, shall we say, in earthly substance. In the period following after the sounding of the trumpets, the period characterized by the outpouring of the vials of wrath, they will also pass over into astral forms. But the lower nature they will have acquired through not having accepted the Christ principle will be expressed in the astral by their having essentially the animal form we have characterized, with the seven heads and ten horns. Now, from all that has been said, you will be able to gather what the relation is between what we call heads and what we call horns. But in connection with this, the question will still arise in your soul. Why is it that just certain organs which appear in the physical body are called horns? Why does one designate as horns the physical organs and their vestiges in the astral when the earth shall have become astral? It can be easily understood that those who have not taken up the principle of Christ must fall back again into the condition in which man was before he could partake of the Christ principle. Man was formerly a non-individual being with a group soul, and we have seen that during the first four ages of the Atlantean epoch, he was furnished with the group souls which are correctly symbolized by the lion, bull, eagle, and man-like heads, the last being conceived of as an animal head. Thus we must imagine that when man reappears in the spiritualized earth and has failed to take in the Christ principle during our epoch, he will then again appear in the old form, because he has contributed nothing toward the higher development of his previous group soul nature. And not only in this form, but with three heads more, which were added during the subsequent ages. Before the great flood of Atlantis, three further ages followed after the first four. In these three ages, those who later received the Christ principle also had, in a certain way, the possibility of taking up three further group soul heads. But they have transformed them. They have raised the animal nature in man to a higher stage. They appear in a spiritualized form when the earth is spiritualized. The others, who have rejected the Christ impulse, will appear with seven heads, because there were before the flood seven ages during which the animal nature was developed. And because in the last three Atlantean ages bisexuality reigned in contradistinction to the first four, each head, so to speak, appears with two possibilities toward the animal nature, with male and female possibilities, so that in these three later ages each head appears with two horns, that is man, with ten horns altogether. Someone might now say, "Well, I quite understand that those who do not work upon themselves so as to strip off the form which they have and lift it up to the human will reappear in the animal form. But I do not understand why horns are spoken of. It is quite comprehensible when heads are spoken of, but why horns?" I will now explain why one not only speaks of horns, but must speak of them. The expression is not merely to be understood symbolically. It is a reality. Those who fail to take up the Christ impulse into themselves will actually appear in astral form also. But because they have so shaped their instincts that they have held fast, so to speak, to the animal group soul, the corresponding instincts appear in the astral body, which men will then have, in the form of horn-like protuberances. It is an actual form. I will explain, by means of a single organ, how it comes about that the man who does not receive the Christ principle will actually appear with horns when the earth has become spiritualized. Take the organ of the human larynx and the windpipe. You are continually breathing air in and out through this windpipe. This is an activity which man exercises. In a person who spiritualizes himself, this activity is in the service of the spiritual. But in one who does not incline toward the Christ principle, it takes on the character of the old forces belonging to the seven heads. Suppose we illustrate it in this way, and there's a picture. The air continually passes in through the larynx from outside. But you know that the astral body of man surrounds him. The stream of air, which passes in, will always be in connection with the astral. Now, when the breath is spiritualized, it can be seen whether the breathing of a man was the servant of the Christ principle. If it was the servant of the Christ principle, it loses the form adapted to the present body. Man himself has the power to transform everything which is astral into a higher spiritualized form. If he does not take up the Christ principle, he is unable to draw out of this fleshly form what is suited to it. And the consequence is that after the fleshly form has fallen away and disappeared, after the physical larynx has gone, this form of the astral body remains, which continuously pokes its way into the larynx with the breath. The form remains in the shape of a horn. Wherever the external astral forces go in and out of man, they remain adapted to the preceding animal form, when man passes over into the astral form. That is, he then appears with true astral horns. These are actual astral shapes. They correspond exactly to the penetration of the astral substantiality during earth life. These pictures do not present random symbols. They present the true form of what will one day appear. This must be clearly understood. Let us now determine our present position in evolution, in accordance with what we have already considered, in accordance with that somewhat uncongenial scheme with many numbers. We now clearly understand that the 49 great transformations of Saturn are over. The seven conditions of life belonging to Saturn, which in theosophical books are also called rounds, each with its seven conditions of form, called globes by them, and that further, the 49 corresponding sun conditions and the 49 moon conditions are also over. Man has so far passed through these 147 conditions in his evolution. Adding to these now come the conditions which man has already passed through during our Earth evolution, the first three conditions of life, which are also called the first three rounds, are behind us, and we are now living in the fourth condition of life, in the fourth round. Now, as each of these rounds includes its seven conditions of form, we have completed 3 times 7 conditions during the first three rounds. Therefore, to the 147, we must add another 21. We have not yet completed the fourth condition of life, but part of it is behind us. We have finished the first three conditions of form, the almost formless spiritual conditions of arupa, rupa, and the astral conditions, and are now in the physical. So to the 147 plus 21, we must add three more. Thus we have completed 171 conditions of form out of the 343 of the seven planets. You must particularly bear in mind that we are now in the 172nd condition of form, which is the physical earth. During this 172nd condition, all that we have described has taken place. When this condition began, the earth was united with sun and moon. During this condition, the sun and moon withdrew, and after these events, man appeared as he now is upon the physical earth. Then began the Atlantean epoch, of which we have spoken. We have also said that we must again divide this condition of form, which is the 172nd, into seven epochs. The first lies in the far distant past. When it began, the sun was still united with the earth. Somewhat figuratively, we have grown accustomed to calling this epoch the Polarian race of mankind. It is difficult to form any idea of this epoch. Then, during the withdrawal of the sun, comes the race of the Hyperboreans. Then, during the exit of the moon, a third, the so-called Lemurian race of mankind. The fourth epoch within the 172nd condition of form is the Atlantean race. The fifth is the one in which we are living. Following the fourth was the great Atlantean flood. After our own will follow the epoch expressed in the Apocalypse of John by the seven seals, and then comes the one typified by the seven trumpets. Now we know that each of these seven epochs is again divided into seven ages. Our own epoch, the fifth, within the 172nd condition of form, is divided into the ancient Indian age of culture, the ancient Persian, the Assyrian, Babylonian, Chaldean, Egyptian, Jewish, the Greco-Latin, our own, a sixth, and then a seventh age of culture. Then follows the great war of all against all. The succeeding epoch is again divided into seven parts expressed by the seven seals, and the epoch expressed by the seven trumpets is again divided into seven parts. If you now consider that 171 conditions of form will be added to those that we have already passed, you will have 342. One more added to this gives 343. But we are living in this one. It stands in the middle. Someone might now say, it is really a very wonderful thing that we have the good fortune to be living exactly in the middle of evolution. This must indeed seem a curious fact to those who do not reflect further upon it, that we are living in the middle of evolution. But to one who understands the whole matter, it is by no means strange. It is no more wonderful than if someone, standing in an open field in level country, where he sees equally far behind and in front, finds himself in the middle of a field of vision. If he goes some distance further, he again sees equally far behind and in front. There would be entirely different conditions in evolution if we were to take our stand at another point. We are always in the middle. Man can always see equally far behind him and before him, even with the highest spiritual vision. Something else might perhaps strike one. Someone might say, how is it that you do not say that we are exactly in the middle in other respects? For here is something that does not quite fall in line. We are in the 172nd condition of form. The exact middle would be in the fourth epoch of this, but we are now in the fifth, that is, somewhat beyond the middle. This does not exactly agree with the statement that we are actually in the middle. Underlying this, there is a remarkable fact. You may understand it by a comparison. If you comprehend this clearly, you will see that it is an important fact. It is really the case that in regard to the great main conditions, we are in the middle. But in regard to the conditions which concern us immediately, we stand somewhat beyond the middle. Why is this? Imagine you are traveling through very level country in a special railway carriage from which you can have a clear view in every direction. Suppose you are able to do this for some length of time. You have a perfectly clear view. And if at any one point in your journey you could rapidly make a sketch of the whole of the surroundings, this picture would be absolutely circular. There is only one case in which this would not be so. Imagine you are sitting in the rapidly moving train, and you note the picture as you see before you. At this moment, you fall asleep, and travel for a time while sleeping. During this time, you are unaware of the way in which the picture is changing. You awake. Imagine that at this moment, the picture you saw on going to sleep quickly arises again. It does not now agree. The reason is that you have been asleep for a certain length of time. Your picture does not now coincide with the view which is equal in every direction, for there is, in addition, the part you have slept through. Let us now ask, is it perhaps the case that man has slept from the middle of his evolution up to our age? It might be explicable to us that the picture would have to agree up to that point. Now, as we have come beyond the middle, it would be possible, if we have slept, that the picture may have shifted a little. Has man been asleep? In the occult sense, mankind has been asleep since the middle of the Atlantean epoch, because that was the time when the whole human race, as such, lost the ancient dim clairvoyance. From the spiritual point of view, man sinks as if into a state of sleep. He begins to turn his attention to the sense world, and thus from the point of view of the spiritual world, passes into a state of sleep. And only when he has regained the higher vision will he have a free view, so to speak, in every direction. There will then no longer be this shift of evolution. There will be the same distance behind and in front. Since the middle of the Atlantean epoch, man has, in fact, been asleep, by reason of his being unable as a normal human being to participate in the sight of the spiritual worlds. If we leave initiates out of account, somnambulists also, if you will, we have to say that man does not see, for seeing means really to look into the world. As regards the spiritual world, mankind is asleep, and will continue to sleep for a time. Since the Atlantean epoch, the statement of John's Gospel holds good. The light shone into the darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. Thus in this division there is hidden an important truth, the truth that mankind is living in a dark age, the age of darkness, and the Christ principle has come in this age in order that mankind might be led forth into the age of light. For this reason it was correct to put the present position of evolution not in the middle, but beyond the middle, because in Atlantis begins the dark age, which will continue into the sixth epoch, when the elect appear in white garments, when they appear as the first of those who are again able, under ordinary normal conditions, to have the spiritual world around them. The age of darkness will have passed away. Then appears the age of which it must be said, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness comprehends the light. For this reason the Black Age is also called the time when man directs his gaze only to the physically material world, and under normal circumstances does not see the spiritual world behind it. We shall now connect this with what has already been said regarding evolution. When evolution has progressed beyond the seventh epoch, beyond the epoch indicated by the sounding of the trumpets, the earth then spiritualizes itself and passes over first into the astral, then into the lower devachanic, and finally into the higher devachanic condition. It returns again to the same conditions by condensing more and more from the finest spiritual. And the condition comes, which is usually described in theosophical textbooks, as the fifth round, which again will have seven conditions of form, and in the middle will again pass through a development of what might be characterized as seven successive race conditions. Now let us, even if it be somewhat difficult, look a little more deeply into the coming conditions of our earth evolution. Let us turn our gaze to a quite definite point in our future evolution, just as we have been considering the present point. Let us start with our present, namely the 172nd condition. Prior to this 172nd condition, the earth had already completed three sub-conditions. The 172nd condition is the earth itself. Three have already been completed, and it is now in the fourth of these conditions. We are, at the moment, considering only the conditions of form. We reckon that we are in the fourth condition of life, or fourth round. Granted this is so, we say, in this fourth condition of life, or round, we have already passed through three conditions of form, and are now in the fourth. Now we ask further, how many of the sub-conditions have we passed through? The first, second, third, and fourth. The last was the Atlantean epoch. This is now completed. We have passed through four conditions, and are now in the fifth, the post-Atlantean. Of this fifth epoch, we have, again, passed through four sub-conditions, namely the ancient Indian, the ancient Persian, the Egyptian, and the Greco-Latin, and are now in the fifth age. So that we can say, before our immediate present stage of evolution, we have completed 3, 4, 4 conditions. These 3, 4, 4 conditions, which we have completed, are described in apocalyptic language as the number of evolution. When therefore it is asked, what is the number of evolution, our evolution? The answer is 3, 4, 4, spoken 3, 4, 4. This is not read according to the system of 10, but according to the system of 7. 3 conditions out of the 7 have been gone through, and 4 conditions out of the next smaller 7 have been gone through, and 4 conditions out of again the next smaller 7. That is what is really meant by 3, 4, 4. One must not simply read it off like other numbers, but it contains, written side by side, the number of conditions passed through. Now let us think of the following. When the earth is spiritualized and has developed to its next conditions, then more and more stages will have been gone through. And the time must come when 6 conditions of the first kind, 6 of the second, and 6 of the third will have been passed through. Just as we now have 3, 4, 4 as the number of evolution, in the future when 6 conditions of life, 6 fundamental races, and 6 sub-races have been gone through, the number 666 will apply, read in the manner described, which is the method used by the writer of the Apocalypse. Thus a time will come when the number 666 is the number of evolution. This will only be in a very distant future, but this future is already being prepared at the present time. 3 great main conditions have been completed, and we are now living in the fourth. But when the time indicated by the 7 seals has passed, when we have reached the great war of all against all, we shall have gone through 6 of the middle kind. When the first trumpet sounds, we shall have passed through 6 such main races. And when the first 6 trumpets are over, we shall have experienced 666. Up to then, mankind will have had the opportunity to prepare for the terrible time, which will follow much later, when not only 666, but 666 will be reached. All that lies in the future is already being prepared now. The time that will come after the war of all against all, the time when the 7th trumpet sounds, will see men who, through having excluded themselves from the Christ principle, will have attained a high degree of evil, of the tendency to sink into the abyss. By then these men will have seen to it that when the point of time 666 comes, they will be able to descend very deeply into evil, into the abyss. Men will have taken into themselves, already in the period after the great war of all against all, when the 7th trumpet sounds, the germs of this descent into the abyss in the far distant future. It will, indeed, for a long time be possible for those who have taken these germs into themselves to turn round and be converted, to turn back in their development in order even then to receive the Christ principle. But the first predisposition will have been formed, and those who retain this tendency will no longer be able, when that distant future has come, which is indicated not by 4, 6, 6, but by 6, 6, 6, to change this tendency into good. They will succumb to the frightful fate of which we have still to speak. Thus we see that with this number 6, whether it is single, double or treble, there is connected something bad for human evolution. We are now living in the fifth main period and the fifth sub-period. After the Great War, we shall pass into the sixth epoch. But before the Great War, there comes, immediately after our fifth age, the sixth age, described as the community of Philadelphia. We know that we are now living in the age in which materialism has spread abroad in mankind. We have seen how, through the centuries, man has become more and more materialistic. But this materialism is such that reversal is possible at any time. The materialist still has the opportunity to turn back. It is, however, necessary that at the present time a spiritual conception of the world should gain ground, a conception which leads a small group of people to this occult spiritual view of the world. This group will comprise those who will lay the first foundation of the great bond of brotherhood in the sixth age, which will follow ours, and is therefore not very far distant, whose beginning lies in a period which can be counted in millennia, and these will bring about the very first division in mankind. Those who persist obstinately in materialism, and also the others who will be inclined to accept a spiritual conception, who in the small group develop a bond of brotherhood, both these will appear in the sixth age. This single six can already be fateful to many, but not finally binding, for a turning back will still be possible. But mankind will continue beyond the great war of all against all. Five epochs will have passed away. The number six will appear again. Afterward, the allurements and temptations will come again to further develop the materialistic tendencies, and to carry them over into the epoch of the sounding of the trumpets. And when six great periods and six smaller periods have passed away, after 6-6, there will already be very considerable tendencies in mankind which will not be so easy to put right as they are at the present time. Thus we see that actually the world of bad tendencies works within mankind more and more, and that the good men separate from the evil increasingly clearly and definitely, in accordance with the description of the writer of the Apocalypse. The last great separation will be when the number six will be fulfilled, not only for the shorter periods, but for the longer ones. This will be the case when our earth has completed its six kingdoms of life, or six rounds, and within the seventh round, again six conditions of form. When the earth has completed this, the tendencies of mankind to evil will have developed to a frightful form. Nothing but evil will then appear, with frightful, devastating power, in those who have remained evil. How often, therefore, within our earth, does mankind have the opportunity to succumb to the enticement of evil? First of all, in the age after the present one, before the Great War. Then man has a second and a third opportunity as well. This descent into evil is gradual. In the period when the earth has first passed over into a spiritual condition, we have to deal, first of all, with two possibilities. When the earth reunites with the sun, those who have received the Christ impulse will then be ripe to rise into the forces of the earth, which unite with the sun. Those who have received the possibility of evil will be excluded. These are, as it were, in such a position that they thrust the sun away from themselves, S-U-N. They thrust away what would enable them to unite with the forces of the sun. They are opponents of the union with the sun. For this reason, the Apocalypse rightly designated the power, the being, who leads men so to spiritualize themselves that they can unite with the Son as the Christ, and, as we shall hear, as the Lamb. One describes the Christ being as the genius of the Son, who unites himself with the earth and becomes also the genius of the earth. He has already begun to be this since the event of Golgotha. There is also an opposing principle to the Lamb. There is also a sun demon, the so-called demon of the sun, that which works in the evil forces of man, thrusting back the force of the Lamb. And it works in such a way that a certain part of the human race is thrust out of the evolution which leads to the Son. These are the opposing forces of the Son. They are in opposition to the Son. At the same time, they are the forces which have the tendency to be entirely thrown out of our evolution when the 666 conditions of development have passed away. They will then be finally cast into the abyss. So that we may say, at the time when the earth is united with the sun, there will be excluded not only what is symbolized by the beast with 7 heads and 10 horns, but also what is furnished with forces which are in opposition to the sun. All this is destined to disappear into the abyss when the 666 is fulfilled. Now this 666 has always been written down in a very mysterious way. We shall see later on that there is every reason to wrap in mystery the facts with which we are now dealing. And for this reason it was written 666. In the mysteries from which the writer of the Apocalypse received his initiation, they wrote 400, then 200, then 6, then 60. This is written in such a way that the uninitiated cannot recognize it. This 666 was hidden. It was to remain a secret through having 400, 200, 6, and 60. By transposing everything, an illusion is produced. Now, in the kind of writing used by the initiates, there is a certain principle which consists in letters being expressed by corresponding numbers. Several of the remarkable people who in the course of the 19th century wished to unravel the mystery of the number 666 hit on this principle of expressing letters by numbers, but they came upon it in such a way that one can say they heard sounds indeed, but not in unison. For they acquired in an unclear way what I have now explained, and what has always been taught esoterically. They found out that when one sets letters of the Hebrew alphabet in place of these numbers, the result is, quote, Nero, close quote. Thus they concluded that 666 signifies Nero. This is not the case. 666 must first be written 400, 200, 6, 60. And then one can arrive at the meaning. Then one must write 400 as, and there's a Hebrew character, 200 as another one, 6 as another one, and 6 as another one. These four letters express the four numbers 400, 200, 6, and 60. In a wonderful way, they have been drawn into this mystery, wonderful through the ingenuity of those who have drawn them in, because at the same time, the sounds of these four letters had a special occult significance. What must the number 666 actually mean, if it is to express what we have explained? It must mean the principle which leads man to complete hardening in external physical life, so that he thrusts from himself just what would enable him to strip off the lower principles and to rise to the higher. What man has obtained as physical body, etheric body, astral body, and lower ego before it rises higher, these four principles are at the same time expressed by these four letters, by Samech, the physical body, Vau, V-A-U, the etheric body, Resh, the astral body, R-E-S-H, and Tau, the lower ego. Samech is S-A-M-E-C-H. Thus we see that what is hardened in these four principles before they begin their divine evolution is expressed by the four letters. The writer of the Apocalypse can truly say, here is wisdom, for wisdom is contained in it. Let him who hath understanding consider the number 666. And now we will read it. We read it, of course, backwards from right to left. 60, then 6, 200, then 400. Samech fa resh tau. We have then to supply the vowels, and it reads Sorath. Sorath is the name of the sun demon, the adversary of the Lamb. Every such spiritual being was described not only by name, but also by a certain symbolical sign. For Sorath, the sun demon, there was this sign, and there's a picture, a thick stroke bent back upon itself, and terminating in two curved points. Now we must understand the writer of the Apocalypse rightly. At the very beginning, he makes a remarkable statement which is usually wrongly translated. The beginning of the Apocalypse runs, "This is the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave unto him to show unto his servants things which must in short come to pass. And he sent and signified it by his angel unto his servant John." Quote, "signified it," close quote. By this we must understand that he gives the important, the real content of the mystery in signs. He has put what 666 expresses in signs. What he describes is the sign, and he describes it thus, "And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb." Revelation chapter 13, verse 11. These are nothing other than the two strokes at the upper part of the sign. And in order to conceal this, he simply calls the two strokes here horns. It was always the case in the use of the mystery language that one used a word in more than one sense so as to make it impossible for the uninitiated to understand without special effort. What he describes here is the symbol of the sun demon. It has two horns like a lamb. In the mystery language, this is expressed by the word Sorath. That word is spelled S-O-R-A-T-H. And thus, if we convert the several letters into their numbers, is expressed by the four numbers 400, 200, 6, and 60. This is a very veiled way of expressing 666. Thus we see that the writer of the Apocalypse is referring to the adversary of the Lamb. When the earth passes over into the spiritual, the forms of men appear below in such a way that they receive their old animal form. The beast with the seven heads and ten horns appears. But there also appears their seducer, the adversary of Christ, who has the great power to prevent their returning to the Son. Man himself cannot be the adversary of Christ. He can only let slip the opportunity to take the Christ impulse, the Christ principle into himself, through what dwells in him as false power. But there is such an adversary, the Son demon. He appears as soon as there is something that can become his prey, before the prey is there, before the men are there with the seven heads and ten horns. There is nothing to lead astray. The tempter has nothing to seek there. But when men appear with such inclinations, then comes the tempter, and he appears as the second beast and seduces them. Thus at the moment when the earth passes over into the astral condition, there appears that in man which existed in him when the earth was still clothed with a covering of water. The man animal appears. From the water one sees the beast with seven heads and ten horns raise itself. Through this man animal, having left the earth unused, Sorath, the adversary of the sun, the tempter, can now arise out of the earth. Through this he can approach man, and tear him down with all his might into the abyss. Thus from this time on, we see a being clinging to man, which has a fearful power. What then does this being do in order to lead man into the most horrible things one can think of? For man to be led into mere immortality, such as is already known to normal man, this monster, which appears as the sun demon, is not needed. Sorry, let me read that again. For man to be led into mere immorality, not immortality, such as is already known to normal man, this monster, which appears as the sun demon, is not needed. Only when what in a good sense distinguishes the beings who bring salvation to mankind, only when spiritual eminence is turned to its opposite, only when spiritual power is placed in the service of the lower ego principle, can it bring mankind to the point when the beast, represented with two horns, gains power over man. The misuse of spiritual forces is connected with that seductive power of the beast with the two horns. And we call this abuse of spiritual power black magic, in contradistinction to its right use, which we call white magic. Thus, through the split in mankind, there is prepared the power to attain greater and greater spiritual conditions on the one hand, and thereby to obtain the use of the spiritual forces and arrive at white magic. While, on the other hand, abuse of spiritual forces is a preparation for the most fearful kind of power of the two-horned beast, black magic. Mankind will finally be divided into beings who practice white magic and those who practice black magic. Thus, in the mystery of 666, or Sorath, is hidden the secret of black magic, and the tempter to black magic, that most fearful crime in Earth evolution, with which no other crimes can be compared. This seducer is represented by the writer of the Apocalypse as the two-horned beast. Thus, there appears on our horizon, so to speak, the division of mankind in the far distant future, the chosen of Christ, who finally will be the white magicians, and the adversaries, the terrible wizards, the black magicians, who cannot escape from matter, and whom the writer of the Apocalypse describes as those who commit prostitution with matter. Hence this whole practice of black magic, the marriage which takes place between man and the hardening in matter, is presented to him in his spiritual vision as the great Babylon, the community made up of all those who carry on black magic. In the frightful marriage, or rather the concubinage, between man and the forces of deteriorated matter. And thus in the far future, we see two powers confronting each other. On the one hand, those who swell the population of the great Babylon, and on the other hand, those who rise above matter, who as man unite with the principle represented as the Lamb. We see how, on the one hand, the blackest ones segregate themselves in Babylon, led by all the forces opposing the sun, by Sorath, the two-horned beast. And we see those who have developed from the elect, who unite with Christ or the Lamb, who appears to them, the marriage of the Lamb on the one hand, and that of Babylon, the perishing Babylon, on the other. We see Babylon descend into the abyss, and the elect, who have celebrated the marriage with the Lamb, rise to the exercise of the forces of white magic. And as they not only recognize the spiritual forces, but also understand how to operate them magically, they are able to prepare what they possess in the earth for the next planetary incarnation, Jupiter. They sketch the great outlines, so to speak, which Jupiter is to have. We see the preparatory forms, which are to survive as the forms of the next earth incarnation, as Jupiter, come forth by the power of the white magicians. We see the New Jerusalem arising out of white magic. But what is described as Sorath, 666, must first be expelled. What has succumbed to the principle of the two-horned beast, and hence has hardened itself into the beast with the seven heads and ten horns, is driven forth. The power by which the sun genius overcomes those who are expelled, which drives them down into the abyss, is called the countenance of the sun genius, and the countenance of the sun genius is Michael, who, as the representative, so to speak, of the sun genius, overcomes the beast with the two horns, the seducer, which is also called the great dragon. This is represented to the seer in the picture of Michael, who has the key to the abyss and the chain in his hand, who stands by the side of God and holds the opposing forces in shackles. Thus is characterized in Christian Rosicrucian esotericism the casting out of those who belong to 666, and the overcoming of the dragon, the seducer. Thus before our gaze today, there appears what the writer of the Apocalypse has enveloped in mystery, what one must first discover by removing the veil, and of which he says, "Here is wisdom. Let him who hath understanding count the number of the beast," parenthesis, that is, the two-horned beast, close parenthesis, "for this number is 666. And that's from Revelation chapter 13, verse 18. Those who have connected this with Nero have made a poor response to this challenge of the writer of the Apocalypse. For you see from what cosmic depths the wisdom must be drawn, which leads to the explanation of the number 666. Although today you may have had to make efforts to rise to a characterization of this moment, you must not forget that understanding the deepest mysteries calls for effort, and the apocalyptist has veiled these deepest mysteries of cosmic evolution. He has veiled them because it is good for man that the most important mysteries should be expressed in signs. For, apart from all the rest, through the powers exercised to decipher the signs, is gained much of what at the same time lifts us up to the good powers themselves. Let us not be cast down because we have to wend our way through a scheme of numbers. If you had had to grasp what was given secretly in the ancient schools in such numbers, before anything else was given, you would have had to go through very much more. There the pupils were obliged to be silent for a long time and quietly listen, when nothing but numbers, 777, 666, and so on, were explained again and again, at first in their formal meanings. And only when they had grasped this meaning were they allowed to know their actual significance. The end of Lecture 11.